When you're kind of in the guts of an FTP session and you're 45 minutes in and you're on the last block or even halfway through sometimes, and it's blooming hard work, you know that you did it the week before and the week before that. And I think those kind of that build up to that sort of thing knows that you can get through that sort of stuff. And it's that focus for me. It's that, you know, yes, there weren't events this year, but knowing that there was a structured plan to get on with and execute against it was the big thing for me.
That's age grouper David Naylor, and you're listening to an age group special brought to you by the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com. Electrolytes in different strengths to match how you sweat. You can get 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENADDICT15. And we're also brought to you by groupevolution.com, luxury triathlon training camps coached by Dave Scott at an exclusive 19th century French chateau. Use the code OXYGENADDICT15 for 15% off. Okay, everybody, welcome to the show. This week's interview is with age grouper David Naylor. Dave's a great guy. I think you're really going to love this interview. He's got a really interesting story of how he got into triathlon. He's been with us for about a year in the team, and his journey culminated in him completing triathlon Outlaw X just recently. So I think you're really going to enjoy listening to his story. It's a real cracker. All right, we should jump into news and results this week, brought to you by our sponsors, Precision Hydration. Remember, you can book a free hydration call with our experts. There's a link in the show notes. Mention that you heard about it on the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast, and you're entered to win a £50 Precision Hydration bundle. You're going to need to take care of your electrolyte intakes when you're training indoors this winter, whether you're on the turbo or whether you're on the treadmill. If you get hot, you get sweaty, you are going to lose an awful lot of fluid because you are getting rid of that heat. And the electrolytes are the stuff that go with it. So if you're like me and you're an exceptionally salty sweater, or you're a very heavy sweater, you need to get right on top of replacing those electrolytes. It's going to help you feel better after the workout. It's going to help you feel less thirsty after the workout, obviously. But crucially, it might well help you stop getting cramps. So if you're like me, if I get on the turbo trainer, I'm getting calf cramps sometimes before I even finish the session. And definitely if I'm in the evening in bedtime, if I take Precision Hydration in the drink, I just don't get it. So I know it's only anecdotal evidence, but it absolutely works brilliantly. So if you take my advice, you'll give them a go. 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENADDICT15. I absolutely love the product. I think the company are fantastic. The team behind it are great. Can't praise them highly enough. All right. Things that we have noticed this week. All right. First of all, I've got to talk about this. You know me, I'm a bike geek. Canyon have just launched their new Speedmax. If you haven't seen it yet, get on over to their website and check it out. They've done a brilliant job of the new bike, but also a brilliant job of the launch. They've pretty much, I mean, you can't miss it. So by the time you listen to this, I'm recording the night before it goes out live. There's already articles on all the major news, triathlon news websites. There's a great 45-minute video on GTN, which Mark and Heather do a brilliant job of talking about the bike. But super impressed by it. There were a lot of rumors about this, and it looks like they've knocked the ball out of the park. They've managed to get the integrated hydration. There's a bladder in the down tube, but also crucially, they've got some kind of mechanism where there's some kind of little nozzle thing. You can just use a normal water bottle on the fly as you're riding or racing, squirt the liquid down through, and it goes into the bladder in the tube, which is amazing. They've got a little storage compartment down by the cranks to put a tube and a couple of CO2s in. They've got storage for liquid behind the saddle. They've got fantastic integrated handlebar systems. Even on the what they're describing as their sort of entry level bike now, they've got fantastic solutions, including, I think, like a hollowed out top tube by the look of things, where you've got some kind of, they call it like an inflator snake, where you can get two CO2s into like a wrap of some kind of fabric, and it slides into the top tube through the bento box. And you can get your stuff in the bento box as usual on top. So I've been super impressed by how it looks. It's obviously not cheap, but it was never going to be. But it looks absolutely amazing. They've got great videos up with the Amfredino talking about it, talking about their aero testing. And get this, they're claiming that the frame of the bike itself is 9 watts faster than the previous generation, which equates to about a 4 minute saving over an Ironman bike leg. And when you're stacking up things like, I don't know, changing to a decent set of race tires and butyl inner tubes over to, you know, really fast latex tubes, looking at 2 or 3 watt savings there, it's a very big saving to claim over what's already a very, very fast bike. So yeah, well done to the team at Canyon. I'm not sponsored by them. I'm not being paid to say this. More's the pity. Canyon, if you're listening, love to do a review. Yeah, as if. But I really love the way this product looks. I've been a massive fan of Canyon's products for years. And my opinion, I think they've raised the bar for a range of tri bikes that have got everything covered from, you know, I'm going to say entry level, although there's nothing sort of entry level priced in terms of, you know, we're not at the £2,000 mark anymore. We're higher than 3,000, but still from that all the way through to the top end where you're spending over 10 grand, looks like a fantastic range. You know me, I'm a big Cervelo fanboy, but this has really turned my head. So get on over and check that out. All right, the next thing I want to talk about, I've just had a press release come through from the PTO. And this is a really big one for triathlon. The PTO have announced paid maternity leave for their female pro triathletes, and actually paid paternity leave for, you know, for all their athletes as well. But get this, they're offering a 15-month paid paternity leave from the beginning of the pregnancy date and ending 6 months after birth. The way it's going to work is at the time of the pregnancy, her PTO world ranking will be fixed. During her maternity leave, she'll be paid monthly payments based on 100% of the PTO annual bonus plan in effect at the time. So if you were ranked fifth at the time, you'd be entitled to a $60,000 bonus payment at the end of the year. They're going to split that, so she would get paid $5,000 a month for the full 15 months, taking that to $75,000. Now, obviously, the people at the top of the tree are going to do better out of this than the ones lower down, but that's massive. That's always been such a huge stumbling block with any of the female pros we've talked to. You know, there is no gender parity in the sport in this way. If you don't race, you don't get paid. If you're lucky, you have sponsors who stick with you, but we only have to go back a couple of years to hear stories about huge international companies like Nike dropping athletes when they got pregnant, not having maternity leave policy. So I think this is a massive step forward. I don't know of another governing body who's done something like this, and it might be that I'm just ignorant about that, but I just think it's fantastic. The quote from Rachel Joyce, who's the co-president of the PTO, says, "We're delighted to have adopted this maternity policy. Recognizes the unique reality women athletes face in trying to maintain a professional athletic career while balancing family planning." So fantastic. You know, I really think it's good. And at the end, it says the PTO has adopted a parental leave policy that will allow PTO professionals who become parents to take up to 4 months parental leave from racing without it having an effect on the PTO world ranking and related annual bonus payments. So again, you know, a bit of gender parity both ways is fantastic for any triathletes, pro triathletes who are starting a family. So they are doing extremely good stuff for the sport. You can go and check that out over at protriathletes.org. And also, interesting news here, I'm really hopeful about this. Challenge Daytona is obviously happening in just a couple of weeks' time now. I've got an interview to bring you. It'll come out in the next couple of weeks with British pro Tom Davis, who's talking about going over to Daytona to race as well. But the PTO have announced that because of, you know, the regulations around COVID, they recognize that press and media can't travel. So they're going to host what they're calling virtual media hub. They're going to have interviews available to people like us over the internet. So hopefully it's looking like we're going to get to do interviews and bring interviews to you over the show, taken in the pre-racing press conference and the post-race press conference as well. So I'm really hopeful. I mean, obviously, I'd have loved to have gone over to Daytona and covered the race live. It's going to be such an amazing event, especially with the way the year has been. No question, it's the biggest race on the calendar this year and arguably, you know, one of the, if not the strongest fields assembled. The way it's slightly shorter than 70.3 distance, and we've got some of the best Olympic distance races in the world, as well as the best 70.3 and iron distance races. it really represents, I think, a true coming together of all the different disciplines for racing to see, you know, we want to know, can Vincent Lewis hold it together over an 80K bike ride and a 16K run? Can Lionel Sanders take him down over that? Can Ali Brownlee take him down? Can Johnny Brownlee do it? I'm really interested to see how George Taylor Brown, Jess Learmonth do against the established 70.3 racers. So it's going to be fantastic. And the chance to bring you some of the interviews from before and after from around that would have been amazing to be over there for it, but I'm certainly not ready to fly yet. And I, you know, there's lots of travel restrictions around anyway, even if people were willing to fly. I know it's a very big deal to get them travel passes and visas, etc., to get people into America. So yeah, watch this space. Hopefully we'll be bringing you some interviews in just a couple of short weeks' time. And last bit of news that I saw, Super League Triathlon have bought the Malibu Triathlon. So this represents a big time entry into, you know, big time American market. They've had races over there before. I think combining the pro races SLT with the race that's already there at Malibu. Malibu is already a massive, famous event. They get tons of celebrities which raise the profile massively already. I think it's a genius move on behalf of the SLT to get that race on board. I think with the marketing brains that they've got and the different innovative race formats they've got, they'll combine it with what's already there at Malibu, and it will do absolutely shed loads for their profile and for their image and for the sport in general over in America. So Michael and Chris over there have done a brilliant job as well, I think. And last up, it looks like there'll be another race happening this coming weekend. It looks like 70.3 Texas is still on. Obviously, you know, things change pretty quickly at the moment. So I'm sitting here Tuesday with my fingers crossed that anyone lined up to race 70.3 Texas actually gets to race. All right, so before we go over to this week's interview of the week, I want to give a shout out quickly to our sponsors, groupevolution.com. Dave Scott is doing two triathlon clinics in Europe next year. First time ever triathlon clinics in Europe. They're running on the 8th to the 14th of April and the 15th to the 21st of April. They're being held in an amazing 19th century French chateau surrounded by a moat. They've got their own 25-meter pool there. There's an open water venue nearby. There's quiet roads to ride on. There's a running track nearby. And did I mention Dave Scott? Legend Dave Scott coaching. It is probably your only chance this year to get coached by Dave and attend a training camp with the man himself in Europe, certainly. Prices are incredibly reasonable compared to the prices I've seen that get charged for his camps over in Hawaii. So if you are ever thinking about treating yourself to an amazing training experience and get to spend 7 days training alongside being coached by Dave Scott, this is the chance for you. So there's a link in the show notes to click. You go over and check that out. And you can also follow the link straight through groupevolution.com. And we can offer you a 15% discount using the code OXYGENETIC15 if you sign up by the end of Christmas Eve. I don't know whether to announce this. I'm going to announce it anyway. Dave Scott's going to come back on the show in a couple of weeks' time. We're going to talk about his camp and we're going to talk about some other stuff I've got lined up as well. Dead excited. Actually only got the email through literally a couple of hours back to confirm it's going to happen. So I'm going to have Dave back on the show. So I'm going to put some stuff out on social. If you've got questions for the man, we're going to have you in a position to ask them and I'll ask them for you and you get questions straight back from him. So again, that's 8th to the 14th of April and 15th to the 21st of April in France. They've got a fantastic COVID secure environment and also a COVID guarantee that has you pay £1 deposit. So get that £1 deposit to secure your place and total money back guarantee if you can't go because you've got COVID or because of travel restrictions. All the details are over on the website. So read all the legal details over there. All right, guys, that takes us beautifully to this week's interview of the week with our age grouper, fantastic age group story with David Naylor. Okay, Dave, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
On this beautiful Thursday afternoon, as we sit in here watching the sun slowly sink away into the horizon outside.
Yeah, I can see that quite nicely from this office window. It disappears over the back of the garden and it gets replaced by a satellite, which sits on the windowsill this time
right?
of year. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Love it. I love it. So listen, let's talk a little bit about your your journey into triathlon. But let's start that by talking about your life outside of triathlon. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what you do for a living, family life, work life, all that kind of stuff.
I'm from the north of England. I live in Leeds. I've got the Yorkshire Dales literally on my doorstep.
Nice.
I quite enjoy listening to people talk about hilly routes and big climbs, because literally everything that we've got out there is hilly and a big climb. I live on the side of the valley, so it's always up or down to get in or out. So yeah, it's a great place to be ultimately. And I enjoy riding the bike. I'm riding the motorbike out there actually. So live in Leeds. I've got a wife and two kids. I've got my eldest has just gone to high school. My youngest is 6 years old. Her bubble's just burst at school, so she's currently floating around the house for the next 2 weeks, really? Unfortunately. Yes.
Is that what they say these days? The bubble's burst.
The bubble's burst, yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think that's the new term. Yeah. I work in technology. So I work as a chief technology officer for a company in Leeds, developing lots of fancy software around data and data science and things like that. So quite a techie person at heart, and I love all of the data that triathlon gives me in terms of all of the kind of HRV stuff and the stuff in Training Peaks and my Aura ring and all the bits that go with it. I'm all over the data. So yeah.
Nice. And so what was your path into triathlon then? How have you ended up in triathlon, and how's it integrated into your life?
It's a bit of a strange one for me, really. I mean, I've done two triathlons in my life, one this year and one in 2015. So in 2015, I did the Brownlee Tri, which was at Harewood House or Harewood House, depending on what area of Yorkshire you're from. and I enjoyed that. It was something that I did instead of road running. I'd done the Great North Run for something like 6 or 7 years in a row, and I always needed an event to work towards, so I always kind of stuck the Great North in at the end of the year and kind of ran for that. But I fancied something different and tried that, and then they never really thought about it again. And I think probably the bigger thing was that I didn't really have an awareness about anything beyond what I'd just done, which I think was a sprint. I was plodding along in terms of work and home. And then I had an event at work, and it was way back in 2016 actually. Ultimately that kind of led me on a slippery slope towards a kind of mental health battle, if you like. The trigger was something that had kicked off at work, which almost lost me my job the day after we'd moved into a house that we probably couldn't afford. So it was kind of like a perfect storm, if you like.
Yeah.
It was stressful enough moving. It was even more stressful the week I got back to work and almost got walked back out the door. It wasn't a terrible event. It was just a software release hadn't gone to plan. And ultimately I was at the top of the pile of responsibility for that one. So it was a challenge, if you like, to navigate my way through that. And ultimately I kind of lost my way a little bit with work, and it made me quite poorly. I think I was at the point where, you know, I was driving into work and sitting in the car park for 10-15 minutes before I went in. Not ashamed to say that there were some tears every so often. And the worst part was that it got really bad, and you know, I used to commute to work on the motorbike, and more than once the thought crossed my mind that it would be quite easy to not actually arrive at the destination, if that makes sense. So I wasn't in a good place, and I kind of stayed in that role for about 4 or 5 months in that position, and then decided that I needed to do something about that. And obviously the biggest issue for me was the work situation, so I moved on. And actually I took a big step up in terms of role and responsibility, which is probably not the most sensible thing to do when you're feeling like I felt. But ultimately it was, you know, I knew that I could do the work that I was employed to do, and I knew that I had something to offer, and I moved on. I guess first couple of years of that role, career was on the up, really, really going well in terms of work. But there was always this thing bubbling in the background, and it kind of probably came to a head 2018-ish, I think. I probably did have a mental breakdown. It wasn't like an official one. It's not on my health certificate, if you like. But you know, I'm fairly confident I did have one. And I was in that position at that point where, you know, you kind of you look at all these people in the world, and I mean, you were talking around Dave Scott a few weeks back on the podcast about this sort of stuff, and I was thinking to myself, my career is going really well, financially we're secure, I've got absolutely no right to feel like this. I was just kind of like that kind of macho male that refused to accept that there was something going on, effectively. But it was there, and it came to a head ultimately. And I think it was getting to the point where Laura and the kids were getting affected by it. And at that point, I knew I needed to kind of fix what was wrong, basically. And you know, the kids were young; they had no idea. But once I'd finally actually opened up and talked to somebody about it, which was Laura, she knew, and she gave me a bit of a kick up the bum to go and get this fixed, essentially. And yeah, so we're probably in late 2018 by that point, and I started a CBT course. And I guess what I learned the most from that was that what I was feeling was perfectly normal. Everybody felt that, and it's the way that your mind works, and it's the way that you manage your mind ultimately that gets you through some of the situations that you find yourself in. And I think the big thing for me was I learned how to take time over situations and reinterpret the outcomes based on the inputs, if you like. And I really managed to kind of work my way through what was going on. You know, the smallest thing would trigger me, and as if I could reinterpret those small inputs and turn them into positive outcomes, then that was the big thing for me, and that was really the turning point. And then so we probably get to about 2019, and I'm kind of looking for something to keep my mind busy, looking for some sort of focus. Still nothing to do with triathlon at this point in time, by the way. I decided in my infinite wisdom to buy a car from a salvage auction. And basically, I had the motorbike, I enjoyed the motorbike, but I wanted a toy, and I wanted a kind of two-seater convertible car. I was looking at Porsche Boxers at the time. And I say to this day that I accidentally pressed submit on the bid that I put in to win this BMW Z4. And it was completely knackered. It had been in a crash, and basically from the front end, all of the front end was gone. All the way underneath the car was ripped to pieces, and the back wheel was basically torn off. And it arrived on this pickup, on this flatbed truck, and rolled off, and it's the bumper's scraping along the drive, and it gets onto the drive, and there's fluids all over the place, and I'm like, what the hell have I done? But ultimately, it gave me, I spent 4 months basically stripping this car back and rebuilding it, getting the parts off the various places on the internet. It cost me an absolute fortune. I'm never selling it, put it that way, because I've put so much money into it, and it's worth about $2,000. So it was completely pointless, but it was brilliant for me because it gave my very busy mind from I've got a very stressful and kind of high profile job, if you like, with a lot of responsibility. And it gave me that kind of disconnect, and it gave me something to focus on outside of that. Anyway, I built this car up, and 2019 in the summer, I went on a stag weekend, and I met a couple of guys that had just come off doing Ironman Bolton. And, you know, these were normal lads. We were on a stag weekend, we were enjoying ourselves, and I just thought to myself, you know, I kind of got an awareness. I knew that Ironman existed, should I say. But I was like, you know, if they can do it, anyone can do it. And that's what it took for me to kind of, you know, come home from that weekend and start looking at what I could kind of do next, because the car was finishing and I knew I needed something else to occupy me ultimately. So I decided to sign up for the Outlaw Half in Nottingham, this year's Outlaw Half in Nottingham. And I looked at the training plan for it, and I was like, that's quite a lot involved in being ready for this sort of thing. And I looked at kind of what I needed to do to get there. And I was like, well, if I'm going to do a half and I'm going to do all that training, what's the difference between doing a half and a full? So I decided to sign up for Ironman Bolton. Obviously, these guys had done it. I was like, you know, they say it's hilly, but, you know, I live in the hills, so it can't be that bad. So I signed up for Bolton as well. And at that point, I was kind of, right, how do I train for this? There's obviously a big commitment here, and that's really good for me because that's what I need. That's what my mind needs, to something to focus on, if you like. And I looked at, I got the Be Iron Fit book by Don Fink, and I looked through that, and I was like, oh, that'll do me. I'll do that. And then I came across you guys because you were working in partnership with Outlaw for the event. So I had a chat with Andy about the coaching plan and what you guys were doing. I think at that time you had like an offer for like £1 for the first month or something like that. So it was kind of a case of there's nothing to lose by doing that and seeing what it's like. And the key thing for me speaking to you was, you know, the argument was you can do the Don Fink, and many, many people do that and complete an Ironman because of it. But it's written in a way where you kind of Southern Hemisphere and you've got an awful lot of work to do in the crappy winter. And if anything changes and you miss a week or two on that plan, you're pretty much done for. Whereas if you follow a structured coaching plan, you've got the kind of reactiveness to what's going on around you, and it's structured around you. And that was enough for me, really. I did the month, loved the training, and then obviously introduced to the other side of it, which, you know, we don't, I think, you know, the thing about what you guys do, which is, I mean, I haven't got a yardstick to compare it to, but ultimately from my personal point of view, it's the team that comes with it that you don't really, you know, that's money can't buy sort of stuff. And that together with the training plan and the community that we've built up around it, that was the key for me. And then 2020 happened. And that
and it blew all the plans out of the water.
Well, it blew the plans out of the water, but it also, you know, the focus wasn't lost because I knew that it was still there and it would be the year after. But the most important thing was, if I was still following that Don Fink plan, I guarantee sitting here today, I wouldn't be training, because ultimately I would have been on my own. I wouldn't have known where to go and what to do next. And the reactiveness around this year, and, you know, even the virtual events that we've done, have been key to kind of keeping that focus for everybody. So yeah, that's the routine, really. Bit of a long-winded tale of how I got there, but started with proper training. I was looking through Training Peaks the other day, actually, on the 1st of December. That's when the boxes started going green, to say to the team. I've just worked my way through this year with that. So we've done a couple of the virtual events, and thankfully we managed to kind of box off the year with Outlaw X. Managed to get one event in this year, and next year I've probably done enough more than I can chew, but you know, I'm gonna blame the fact that everything's being referred. It's not my fault. so that's how I got into triathlon, and that's ultimately the year I've had with the team, and the progress that I've made is, I feel like I've not done anything yet, although we completed Outlaw X. I kind of want to include that as a half, but because the swim was shortened, I feel like I'm cheating.
No, we're going to give you that one. We're going to give you that as a half for sure. Yeah, definitely.
It was hard work. So thank you.
I think one of the big challenges this year for a lot of people who are in a similar position to you is sometimes you need to see it before you believe it. Mm-hmm. And it's fine, me and Andy sitting here with our coaching hats on and saying, no, you're definitely making progress. And it's even arguable you can see that in your power numbers going up and your run speed and swim speed coming down. But ultimately, if you don't have an event to sort of recalibrate your idea of where you are relative to what you thought you could do, it becomes a kind of unknown still. I remember it's a bit like when we were kids, when I started track running, our track got dug up the year I started doing it, and we couldn't do any real track running or any track sessions or race for an entire summer. And so the next summer we came in and we weren't really sure what our level of fitness was, because we hadn't had a real track to train or race on all year. And that first race back, we were all so much further forward in terms of speed and time than we thought we should be. It's like we all had to immediately recalibrate where we were in our heads. And I think it's going to be the same for a lot of athletes next year, because you've essentially done an entire year's worth of training. And well, it's great you got Outlaw X in at the end of the year, but imagine if you hadn't, you'd have had all that training and still not really know where you are in an event fitness kind of way.
Yeah. And I think I'm really thankful for getting Outlaw X because of that. They did an amazing job of putting that on, and the way that it was done in a COVID secure way, honestly, unbelievable.
It was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. And I think, you know, again, back to that kind of, that mind state that I've learned to kind of progress with. And, you know, I'm all about the kind of mindfulness self-help books that kind of help me understand what's going on around that sort of thing. But I think, you know, the ability to reinterpret 2020, and actually I think to myself, do you know what? I probably could have done Bolton in July this year, But I wouldn't have done it comfortably, I don't think. You know, I went from nothing in December, still not been able to swim up until probably about a month ago. I couldn't do proper freestyle swimming. So I would have definitely been doing that with breaststroke. And I can go from banking all the training this year and hopefully go moving from a kind of complete mode to a compete mode next year. And yeah, that's the key thing for me. You know, I've done Outlaw X, and to be fair, you know, I finished halfway down the field. I did it in 5:41 or 5:37, something like that. I can't remember the exact number. There's nothing to be kind of shirked on. That it's a
good
effort.
Time. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a really
and it
good
would have
time.
Been better if my body hadn't have fallen apart on the run. It would have been a lot better as well. So, so yeah, I think I'm looking forward to next year with that in mind. Ultimately, that, you know, I've got effectively 2 years worth of, or at least a year and a half worth of kind of training in the bank, and two winter blocks, which is probably the biggest thing.
Yeah,
so, yeah, yeah.
Well, you've obviously got quite a large amount of self belief to enter an Ironman before you can even swim front crawl. I love that. I love stories like this where you kind of go, yeah, I met these guys, we're on a stag do, they'd done it, sounded good, signed up. I love that stuff. Because I think so many people hold themselves back by either thinking that they can't, or worse, being told by, you know, people at the club or whatever, oh no, you need to be 3 years in before you can contemplate entering Ironman. If that's the thing that sets you on fire, get in and get it entered.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I wasn't going to drown. I can do breaststroke, and it's no shame in doing breaststroke. But I didn't want to. I really wanted to nail the front crawl. I remember when I did the Brownlee try in 15, I tried to do front crawl. I took like a couple of kind of lessons in a group, and I couldn't do it. And this year, you know, from the point of where I was in December with swimming, again, I took a couple of lessons then, but I was in a 15 meter pool, and all the technique that you learn in 15 meters, you crashed into the end of the wall before you know it. So so there's no point really. So, but yeah, I spent all year kind of working on it, but I did get into a state with the swimming where, again, it was more of a mental battle for me. And it literally, it was 6 weeks ago that I managed to do my first 100 meters without stopping.
Yeah, I remember.
In the pool.
Yeah.
And it took somebody else in the team that started from a very similar place to me, but much later on, completing that milestone for me to think, well, you know what? Every time I go in the pool, I'm carrying my pool boy with me, and I hug it for dear life, and I never let go. And I did all of my swimming blocks up this year with the pool boy, and I have to get rid of that. That's my safety blanket. I don't need that. Let's crack on and see what I can do. So 50 meters, yeah, I can do that. 75, I can do that, but it's hard work. But what's 25 meters after that?
Yeah.
So I pushed through and I did it. And then the day after, I went back to the pool because it was the first time I've actually enjoyed myself in the pool. And I was like, well, if I can do 100, what's 200 meters? So I did that as well. And what it showed me was that, you know, it's 90% mental, isn't it? Swimming's awful in terms of if you've not got a base of technique, which I didn't have at the time. I can be so much more efficient with what I'm doing, but I can build on that. I just need to make sure I can break that glass ceiling and push through those distances first of all. And then, yeah, a couple of weeks, in fact, was it last week was test week. And that was my milestone. In fact, I've got it in Training Peaks as a goal, which I've now ticked off for the year, which is complete a CSS test in freestyle on my own. And I've done it. And, you know, I did enter not being able to do front crawl. I can do it now. Can I go the distance? No, not yet, but I know that I will be able to, and that's the key thing. And, you know, talking about kind of doing things that scare you, I think it was Jess that was on the podcast the week that said that, or possibly Laura, I can't remember. But even before I'd broken those swim barriers, I entered next year's Ironman Ireland. And I know all about the swim on that one. So in fact, it sometimes doesn't happen because it's that bad. But do you know what? That's fine. I probably do have that mental strength now, but it's taken me a while to get there with it. And it's confidence as much as anything in what's possible. And I think that's this year showing me that more than anything, is that, you know, I started where I was. I'm 18% faster running. I've got a CSS that I can be happy with. Now, I've actually got a clean sweep in the 10% club for the team, which I calculated last night. I need to get onto Andy about getting my hat. That's my exercise snack alarm going off. I'll do that later. I think it is about that kind of, it's that, you know, knowing what's possible ultimately, and knowing that, you know, these normal people that have got busy days and busy jobs can do it as well. And you know what, my position's very, very easy compared to some guys in the team. You know, I don't work shifts. I work long hours, sometimes highly stressful, but nothing compared to some of the guys that are out there doing this stuff day to day. So do you know what, I've got no right to kind of complain, and the training that we do is for me, it's very easy to fit in, especially now that we're at home, because you know, I'd get up in the morning and jump on the bike at 6:30 a.m. before I have to get on the commute to work. Now I can get on the bike at 8 o'clock, jump off, have a shower, and I'm at work by 10 past 9, because it's literally down the steps. So
Well, talk a little bit about your training then, and how you do fit that in. What does your standard training week look like? Well, let's take it outside of lockdown to start with, but then, you know, talk a little bit about how it is different during lockdown.
Obviously, if the pools are open, it's slightly different, because we've potentially got two sessions to do a day. But what I like to get the bike out of the way and done in the morning. Although I've been drawn to the power hours over summer and done them in the evenings. But then I've missed strength and conditioning because I've done that. Because you know, you get off the power hour and you're kind of like, oh, I've got to do strength and conditioning now, and it's quite easy not to do that. And then you slide into the day after and the day after that, and you just tend not to do it. So I've really tried to focus in on dealing with some of that stuff. Get the bikes out of the way in the morning, so the Tuesday and Thursday bike sessions. And then similarly, I'll actually swim when the pools are open before I start work on Wednesdays and Fridays. And then the runs, one of the people that's benefited most from me doing triathlon is the dog, because he loves a good run. I remember when we were doing brick runs earlier in the summer, and I'd sort my trainers out before I jumped on the bike, and he'd literally be sat waiting for me at the end of the bike for me to get off the bike and put my trainers on so we could go out for a run.
Brilliant.
So yeah, just it's you know, for me, it's during the week at least, it's get the long stuff out of the way in the morning, fuel yourself up, get cracking on with the day, and then at least you've got the time in the evening as well with the kids, and you can kind of focus on family life as much as anything else. And again, with where we are in terms of lockdown at the moment, getting the runs done during the day, you know, grab an hour for your lunch and go out and do your run. I do tend to go off piste a little bit with the runs sometimes, though, because I do most of them on trail runs rather than road runs. There's literally woods just down the road there, and it's a lot easier to run with the dog in the woods, but it makes e-pace a bit of a challenge sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm in a similar position. I've got a bunch of woods behind my house, and I do a similar thing in it. And I think you do have to let go of the sort of, there is a specific pace here for a specific reason, and just kind of go, I'm running at about that intensity, and that's fine as long as I'm not going too hard. But I'm a massive fan of exercising in nature when you possibly can.
Yeah.
The opportunity to be in the woods, it's the best thing.
Yeah. And then obviously with the weekends, the long rides are, you know, I try not to do them on as much as I can, really. I've got no excuse where I am in terms of the area of the world that I live in to get out on the bike and get them done. And you know, as I said earlier, that's not a hill, this is a hill. So yeah, some of the ones that I go up and down, great fun. I usually finish off the ride. I kind of go back around the back of the dales and then come back through skips in an Ilkley way. So you've got the Cow and Calf, which is at the top of Ilkley, and it goes over the moors, and that's the last big climb, and it's where the kind of road races go around there, and all the roads painted up. It's like almost like you're going up the Alp for 30 seconds. So it's nice. Quite nice. That's just, and then it's a nice flat run home after that. So yeah.
Talk to us a bit about Outlaw X. What was your experience there like? Because obviously that was a big step up in distance, wasn't it, from having only done a sprint before?
Yeah. I loved it, to be honest. It was great. I think the weekend was great. Meeting everybody on the team was amazing. When the note came through late that night that the swim was shortened, I was kind of like, I mean, like most people, I think, probably secretly happy. I mean, there was no doubt I was breaststroking that entire thing. So for me, it was okay, but my God, it was cold. It took a bit of getting used to. And then we'd actually done a route recce 2 weeks before that, so I knew exactly what to expect on the bike. And it was windier that day by far. But yeah, really enjoyed it on the bike. And I think it was really funny, actually, because one of the things that that you kind of do with the, when you're planning for that race, especially with the team, is you kind of talk, you look at your power numbers and you look at what's sustainable for you, and it's your race, and it's you against you, effectively, based on what you've done this year. So I was riding my power, and I put this in my write-up at the time. I was like, there was one guy, his name was Glenn. I'll never forget his name or his face, actually. And he kept busting past me. And you know, it didn't bother me at all for the first couple of times. And then it happened again, and I wasn't chasing him. I was just riding my numbers on the power meter. And I go past him. And it must have happened about 10 or 15 times by the time we got back to Forestby Park. And in the end, we were about 2 miles out. And I went past him again on the kind of flat run in. And I heard him swear at me, or around me, should I say, and he just totally got red mist and went for it, and it disappeared into the distance. And I was just laughing at that point. I was like, well, I've as David Goggins would say, that's one soul taken. so yeah, and I jumped off the bike, got out on the run, and probably within the first half mile, there he was. I tapped him on the shoulder and wished him good luck, and never saw him again. So it was really funny that really enjoyed it. But yeah, the bike for me, biking's probably, I mean, for most people, I guess it's the easiest bit, but the thing I struggle with the most is running. And I get past a certain kind of time running, probably around 45, 50 minutes, and my feet fall to pieces on me. And it really happened badly on that day. I was, you know, three laps around that course, and probably one and a half laps in, started to really struggle with it, and I get this really kind of bad burning sensation all the way up my feet, and it was a bit of a lonely run to be honest. I didn't see many people, certainly from the team or anybody that I knew, obviously, and because of the situation we were in, the family weren't there to kind of give me a kick every lap to kind of get me around. And I remember every time I did see somebody from the team, it gave you that little bit of kind of that burst of kind of speed, and then I came around the kind of final corner. And there everybody was screaming, and I don't quite know how I managed to speed up around that last bit, because I didn't have anything left, but I did. But yeah, the run, I did it in 2 hours and 5, and I was hoping for kind of like a 1:45, and I probably would have done it, but as I say, the body just let me down at that point. And I'm thinking to myself when I cross the line, Christ, I've got to do that times two. And maybe I need to have a look at these feet and figure out what's wrong with them, because it had happened multiple times through the year when we'd gone and done the long runs. So yeah, I really enjoyed the event, and as I say, I did it in five. I'm going to look behind me, sorry, because this is my birthday present.
That's nice.
Nobody can see this on the thing, but it's a frame with all the bits in it. So yeah, it was 5:37 and 1 second, and the bike, 3 hours and 33 seconds. So the 33 seconds, I'm making a habit of getting close to those
yeah, those magic numbers, hey.
Yeah. So yeah, I got back from that, and I decided that I needed to kind of have a look at myself biomechanically. So I went and saw, first thing Monday morning was a sports massage, because I was broken, and he kind of took one look at me and said, Your shape's a bit funny here. You've got your shoulders are the wrong way, and your pelvis is the wrong way. Your muscles are all tight around the wrong bits. You need to go and see a podiatrist. So I went to see a podiatrist the day after, actually. And he took one look at me, and he said, "Tell me again what you did this weekend." I told him, and he went, "I'm not entirely sure how you managed that." And I said, "Why?" And he was like, "Well, you're a corkscrew." And I was like, "What do you mean?" And he said, so he basically says, your pelvis tips down and left, and because of that, your shoulders are twisted up and right, and it's all coming from your ankle. And effectively, I've been operating probably for the past 8 years on a semi-dislocated ankle, because I've rolled it really badly playing football.
Okay.
Many years ago, and I proper did the tendons on it. And I did it the night before we went on holiday for 2 weeks to Greece, so I obviously didn't get it looked at because I would have been shouted at by the wife.
Yeah.
So I went on holiday with a really badly swollen foot, and it never really got fixed after that. And it's always niggled me. And yeah, basically, he's manipulated my foot, turned it one way, hit it the other, and it cracked into place. And immediately, my pelvis was straight and my shoulders were straight. And I was like, oh, okay. So he's like, you know, he said to me, I don't entirely know how you've run that distance, but well done. but now let's fix this and get you some orthotics fitted. And so that's happened now, actually. I've just finished wearing them in and I can start running in them now. So I'm hoping that biomechanically, at least, I'll be able to kind of do that long stuff pain-free because it was horrible before.
Yeah. Well, that's a big step, isn't it? When you can immediately feel a difference when you've worked with a physio or a podiatrist or whoever, when they change something and immediately you can feel that difference and think, oh, right, okay, I see how this is supposed to feel.
Well, that first kind of manipulation, I'll call it, that he did, you know, when I run and I look down, I could see my knee and my foot turning out and my knee twisting, especially up hills. And for the first 2 weeks, until I got the orthotics fitted, or even up to that point, it was amazing. I could look down; I just felt better.
Yeah,
and I think it helped. I think it helped the swim as well. To be honest, it was around that time where my swimming started to improve because I could straighten my foot. And obviously, before I was dragging an anchor behind me, effectively.
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, don't ignore that stuff. Is the message there, I suppose? And if there's anything niggly, just go and get it looked at because, you know, it could be a massive fix for not a great deal of outlay, really. So
yeah, interesting. And so, looking forward to next year, then. Obviously, if things get rolled back, you've still got Outlaw Half and Ironman UK in the horizon for next year.
No, so Ironman, yes, Outlaw Half. I moved to Outlaw X.
To Outlaw X, okay.
Yeah. So, but next year's, I've got the Epic Man Half as a warm up to Bolton.
Nice.
So, you know, that's hilly. Bolton's hilly. Let's do them things together. And then I've got Ireland on the 15th of August. That's full distance. And then Bowood. I've got it. I'm looking at my events plan, and I haven't booked this yet, but I've got Outlaw X Run Redemption marked in there. So I really want to do it, but I've got a really busy year. So if you kind of look at from 15th of August, I've got Ireland, and then the 12th of September is Bowood, and then the 26th of September is X. So it's probably a little bit much, to be honest. So I might wait for X for a year.
Well, maybe you get the redemption by going and having a decent run at Bowood.
Exactly.
Maybe that's the redemption that you get.
Yeah, and then at the back end of the year, I've got two marathons that are deferred from this year. So I've got the Manchester Marathon and the Yorkshire Marathon, and they're a week apart. So again, one of them might have to get sacrificed.
I love how you're slipping all this in during the interview, so that I can't remind you too hard.
I haven't done the race plan yet. and when I do, those won't be going on it.
Yeah, so, we'll be talking about at least one of those nearer the time.
No, I'm aware. I mean, yeah.
I love it. Great stuff. So listen, you mentioned before about building the car.
Yeah.
About stripping it down and getting the bits and rebuilding all of that. Do you have a similar approach with your bikes? Have you found that translation of interest into bike tinkering that you had with car tinkering?
Honestly, no. And I think probably the reason for that is because I got a brand new bike in January. And therefore, I didn't need to do a great deal of tinkering with that. However, that was a road bike. So I got the Cannondale System 6. Lovely bike. I put some nice bars on it, some TT bars. And that's what I did X on. But it was kind of like I looked at the time of X and I looked at the people that were kind of doing 20 minutes less than me, probably an awful lot less effort. And that was the sales pitch anyway in the house to get myself a TT bike. So I've just got hold of a P3 and I'm going to get that fitted at the end of December with Matt Bottrell.
Nice.
So that one probably does need some tinkering, but I'm kind of in the position of don't touch it until I've seen Matt because there's no point, basically.
Yeah.
So I'm not the most kind of, I mean, having said I've rebuilt a car, it was pretty much kind of bodywork and the bit that I couldn't do was the back wheel. So a lot of YouTube. videos were watched. And you know, I stripped the front of the engine off, but that was probably about it. So I'm not the most kind of mechanically minded person. If you stick a computer in front of me and I'll sort that out, no problem.
I find it baffling that you can say you're not the most mechanically minded person. There's nobody I know apart from people who run garages who can strip a car down. If you can do that, you can tinker with your bike.
I'll share the Google album with you of the car as well. You won't believe how bad it was. But I haven't needed to touch the bikes, to be honest. And I think that's one area, and especially, you know, because I mean, we were talking to Matt the other day about the gains that you can get, and I don't know anything about aerodynamics and any of the things that go with it. The bike that I've got has got DI2 on it. It's got I've just had it kind of serviced. It's got some new head bearings and stuff like that. But ultimately, I have no idea what I'm doing with it. I don't even know if the seat is in the right position for me. And therefore, I might as well just go and see an expert on that sort of
Absolutely.
Stuff. The gains that I'll get from seeing him, you know, I'm hoping there'll be a big difference. And doing it now means that the entire training block I use to train in that new position as well. So that's the plan, at least.
Smart. All right, and then to bring it full circle, then we started off talking about mental health and awareness around mental health. How have you found regular training help support that?
Massively, absolutely massively. Something to focus on first of all, but that kind of rush that you get is the big thing for me. And ultimately, as well, you know, when you're kind of in the guts of an FTP session and you're 45 minutes in and you're on the last block or even halfway through sometimes, and it's blooming hard work, you know that you did it the week before and the week before that. And I think those kind of that build up to that sort of thing knows that you can get through that sort of stuff. And it's that focus for me. It's that, you know, yes, there weren't events this year, but knowing that there was a structured plan to get on with and execute against it was the big thing for me. It's made a huge difference. I mean, I was just thinking yesterday, I had a really, really busy day. I was literally back-to-back meetings, lots of stress. I kind of finished the day at 6 o'clock and went upstairs and I had the run to do. And there's this kind of, you know, there was one part of my mind that was like, yeah, just don't do it. But the other part of it was, you need this. You need to just release all of the crap from the day and get your ass out and run. And I did it. And Laura asked me if I felt better when I got back in. And I was like, do you know what? I've not even thought, since I walked through the door, I've not thought one thing negative, one thing bad. You know, I've not thought about the day at work. I was like, the easy answer to that is yes, because it's just cleaned my head effectively.
Yeah.
So yeah, it makes a huge difference. And I think, you know, I'm a big kind of believer in kind of, you know, learning more about that sort of thing as well. I've kind of been through 3 audiobooks this year, which have had a big impact on that sort of thing and helped with the training as well. You know, I mentioned David Goggins earlier about taking souls, and I'd read his book Can't Hurt Me. And you know, if you can sift through the kind of macho just do it stuff in that book, it's not the most kind of it doesn't plan as much as it probably ought to, it's fair to say, in that book. But it's all about mind over muscle, effectively, and the fact that, you know, you can do these things. You know, talking about the training, I remember when we were doing the Lakeswin in lockdown event, and I was listening to The Art of Resilience by Ross Edgley when I was on the run. My feet had done the usual thing of falling apart after about an hour and 40 minutes, and it was agony. Like, literally every footstep was hurting me, and I knew I was kind of like 4 miles from home. I was running the loop, and I was at the point in the book where he was basically talking about the fact that his wetsuit had created this wound around his entire neck, and he had to do a sprint across a shipping channel on the south coast to get across before the boats came in. And I was thinking to myself, my feet hurt. And he did that. So just get on with it, basically. And yeah, I think that sort of thing is massively helpful for me. But the big one that, I mean, this was, you know, that if you haven't listened to this, it's, for me, it changed my life, actually. And I wish I'd have had it in 2016 and 17 when I really needed it. But The Chimp Paradox.
Yeah.
What a book that is, because yes. that just helped me understand what was going on with me. And it's translatable to every single thing that you do in life, training, work, family, everything. It's made me a better dad because I can kind of relate to what's going on with my soon to be teenager. And ultimately it's allowed me to kind of realize that, you know, when that chimp wants you to stop, you can manage that. And I've called mine Barry. so I've actually given him a name and, you know, no disrespect to any Barrys that I know, by the way, when I've called him Barry. But yeah, it allows me to kind of really process what's going on in my mind. And that's a really good book for that sort of thing. And it's helped massively apply some of the things that we do in training, some of the difficult sessions. All of them together have kind of, you know, helped with that sort of stuff. So, you know, I think if you look at the journey that I've been on fitness wise, it's not just body, it's mind. And I'm in such a good place now compared to where I was. And, you know, I'm a hell of a lot fitter than this time last year as well, which is great. So,
good man. Brilliant. Well, do you know what, mate? I think that's a good place to wrap this up. It's been really interesting hearing your story. And honestly, thanks very much for being so honest and open about, I think so many people go through mental health challenges, come out the other side of it stronger and find ways to help manage stuff like that. So important we talk about it and share the fact that even if one person listens to this and goes, all right, I'm going through something similar here and I'm not alone. That's really valuable, I think, in the world.
Yeah. It's really important you know, ultimately talking about it is the first step to recovery, isn't it, at the end
Absolutely.
Of the day? And that was the one thing that I didn't do for far too long. So, yeah. And, you know, for me, finding this in my life and finding the team environment and the focus has been huge. I feel at the moment like I'll do this as long as my body lets me do it. And there are people in the team that have done far more than me. And I've got many, many years on me. So hopefully I'll be around for a while. Yeah.
Awesome. Good man. All right, listen, thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Okay. I hope you enjoyed that. I really enjoyed talking with Dave. I think his triathlon journey is one thing and it's pretty inspiring in itself, but it takes a lot of bravery to come on and talk about mental health issues because, you know, rightly or wrongly, there is still stigma around it. And a lot of people struggle. A lot of people have been struggling with, you know, stress and the idea of career-related, stress-related breakdowns, something that's very close to my heart because I went through a very similar thing in the year before I left teaching. And it's incredibly hard to talk about it, even to your closest friends, let alone to, you know, to come on a podcast and talk about it and share your experience. So Dave's way of dealing with this, or part of the way of dealing with it, has been really effective for him to channel himself into exercise and to really treat it as a thing that keeps him mentally well as physically well. I think it's brilliant. And I really hope you enjoyed that and hope you got something from it. And I just encourage you, if you've got something like that going on, I remember, you know, the last year that I had in teaching, the school that I was at went through a pretty turbulent time. Myself and a lot of my long-term friends from the school and long-term colleagues went through a very difficult time. And one thing that, you know, we get together now sometimes and talk about this, but one thing we wish is that we'd opened up to each other a little bit more at the time about the struggles that we were going through. And rightly or wrongly at the time, we thought there was strength in silence. And I don't look at it that way at all. 6-7 years later, I look back and I think it would have been much better for me. It would have been much better for my friends, for us all to kind of talk about and discuss what was going on for us. So if that's affected you, if you've got something like that going on in your life as well, I really encourage you to reach out to somebody close to you and talk about what's going on, because talking can make a difference. Effective counseling, effective therapy can make a difference, but just having a friendly set of ears with a friend can make a real difference as well. Just to have your true feelings out there and have somebody validate them. So yeah, I hope that's helped, and I hope that's connected with a few people. Coach's Couch this week. I'm going to change tack a little bit here. I want to talk to you about, I was on a call today with a young lady who's interested in joining the team, and we were talking about her personal triathlon journey. And, you know, she's a very fast athlete. She's been a podium at 70.3s. She's looking at different coaching options at the moment. And one of the key challenges we were looking at here was she had a couple of things going on. Mainly, the big challenge she's faced is she's got a run injury that niggles every time she runs, and she hasn't run pain-free for a while. She'll have a period off running. She'll feel that she's cured. She'll have treatment. She'll get back to running. And anytime she got back into what she considered like real sessions, the injury flared up again. And it's been like this for over a year to 18 months. And this constant cycle of being driven to do the run sessions, being driven to do hard work because she feels that's what she needs to do to be fast. And hey, who's not been there, right? But that flares the injury up, which means she's got to take some time off running again, which means she's got to take treatment again. And when we were taking a step back and looking at her overall racing, the thing that she felt was holding her back was, I really need to work on my swim because I'm a 35-ish minute swimmer and I want to be down near 30. So there's 4 or 5 minutes I'm giving away there to my competition. And I feel like I should be getting back to my best at my running. So she'd run sort of 1:44 in her last race and wanted to be down under 1:40. So again, there's like 4 or 5 minutes there. And as I asked her what she wanted and what she was looking for, the focus turned to swimming. I don't feel I'm a very good swimmer. If I was a better swimmer, I'd be out of the water with, you know, more of the girls I want to race. I need to pick up these 4 or 5 minutes here. And if I could just, you know, just put some consistent running together, then I could also pick up that time in the run. And I just want to be racing well again. When we drilled right down into it, the thing that was really missing here was the ability to go and have a run without being in pain. And when we took a step back and looked at it, I was saying, you're talking about putting extra hours into the swim here so you can find a few of these minutes. If we just spent a little bit of that time, you know, by the time you've gone to the pool and done a swim, you've probably taken 2 hours out of your day. And if you do that 2 times extra a week, that's 4 hours out of your week. She's a very busy professional. And she was honest and said, look, the thing that slips is doing my prehab work, doing my rehab work, doing my conditioning work. It'll get pushed to the end of the day and then I won't get it done. And I'd rather go for a swim than I would do the prehab, or I'd rather go for a run than I would do the conditioning work. And when we took a step back, I said, if you look at it this way, if we could get your body healthy again, if you could spend the time to do the conditioning work and the prehab work, that would unlock your run. You're not running 1:44 because you lack the fitness to run a 1:38. You're running 1:44 because every step you put down in that race, that glute is absolutely murder, like someone sticking a knife in there. Your priority has got to be healing. It's got to be getting your body well again. We've got to prioritize doing the thing that lets us do the thing we want to do. It isn't always the thing we want to do, the conditioning work or the prehab work, but it's what we have to do in order to be able to do the things that we enjoy, the running, the biking, the swimming. And I told a story about one of the physios that I'd seen ages ago who used this analogy, and he said, I wish that I could take your running shoes and I could lock them into a little locker, and that you had to hang the key to this locker up on the wall above your strength and conditioning mat. And so every time you wanted to go for a run, you would have to go and stand on your strength and conditioning mat to reach onto the wall to get the key. And you would realize that the key to being able to go for a run is to get on that strength and conditioning mat and do the prehab and the conditioning work. And that was something that really got through to me. If I wanted to run pain-free, I had to spend, and I still do, spend a lot of time doing conditioning work for my Achilles tendons to stop them being sore and inflamed and blowing up. And when I do the work, you know, I'm no different to anybody else. Sometimes I'm better at it than others. But when I do the work, I have a period of running where I'm pain-free. And so lo and behold, I forget about it. I stop doing the work. The niggle starts up again and it becomes pain-free. And this has been a cycle for me for probably the best part of a decade. That piece of information, the idea of having a physical key to unlock the running shoes, is a really clever one. And if it's something that you're going through as well, I'd encourage you to take a step back, because a story that I often hear is, I'm willing to do the work. You know, I want to get faster. I want to win my age group. I'm willing to do the work. But are you really? That's my big question to get you to ask yourselves. Are you willing to do the work that you have to do in order to do the work that you want to do? Because we all want to bike and run and swim, But are you willing to do the prehab work, the conditioning work, the stuff that's going to get your body its MOT to be able to go out and train? And maybe that's just a little bit of reframing in your head away from, well, you know, the conditioning work can wait, to that's actually the thing that's going to allow me to do the things that I enjoy and the things that are fun. Because I guarantee she's going to be faster once she gets the conditioning work done and that glute starts firing and the glute pain goes away. Then she'll be able to run consistently again as well. Oh, and by the way, let's add in here, at the moment she's doing a lot of fast running, really short intervals on the track, which are making this flare up. But again, the compulsion that we have, the worry is, if I don't run fast, I'm never going to run fast in a race. Whereas we know, if you run consistently, even if that consistent running is steady, then that consistent running builds a fantastic base of consistency that makes your body strong and durable. So I hope that's helped you. I hope that's something you'll consider. I hope you'll spend, you know what, even if it's only 3 minutes lying down on the conditioning mat and doing some glute activation work, some single-legged hip bridges, those 3 minutes will absolutely be worth their weight in gold and pay back massive, massive dividends for you. If you want to find out more, if you want to book a call with me and have a chat about coaching and how we could work with you, there's a link in the show notes. I think with Team Oxygen Addict, we've got the most comprehensive triathlon coaching program for busy age groupers. So as well as getting your training plan for you and your events and coach support, both within our group coaching calls and within our Facebook group, we've also got official partners with Performance Chef, so you get meal plans to go along with your plan, with Matt Bottrell Bike Fitting, so you've got advice and webinars about position and aerodynamics and discounts on his bike fitting service. Personalized hydration calls from our partners Precision Hydration and a discount with them, and also HRV for training, so you get heart rate variability guidance so that your training plan alters on a day-to-day basis based on how ready your body is to train that day. And there's too much to go into there in a separate podcast, but if that resonates with you, if the idea of, if you've ever thought, I don't know whether I should train today or not, I don't know whether I'm being soft or whether I am really, really too tired out and stressed to train, HRV and the app HRV for training can be the key to unlocking that, alongside a decent training plan and proper coaching advice. Okay? Come join us on Tuesday, 7:15 p.m. UK time on the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast Power Hour. Get on Zwift, come and train with us. You'll get some of the sessions that we use with the team, and I guarantee you'll love it. It's workouts that are guaranteed to raise your FTP and give you a faster, more powerful bike leg this coming season. All right, let's wrap it up then. So discount codes and deals for you. Precisionhydration.com, use the code OxygenAddict15 for 15% off your electrolyte order. GroupEvolution.com, use the code OxygenAddict15 for 15% off training camp with none other than the man, Dave Scott. Again, click the link in the show notes for details there. And over at TeamOxygenAddict.com, you can book a call with me to discuss your coaching and training plan needs. We think we've got the most comprehensive triathlon coaching program out there for busy age groupers. And remember, there's links in the show notes for all these sponsors, so you don't have to remember them. All right, everybody, until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. See ya.